young left-handed batting Owen Casey. Fans are standing here at Oracle Park. Walker ready and delivers. Swing and a miss, and the ball game is over. The Giants beat the Cubs in game one of this three-game series by a score of 5-2.
Cubs go down, as you heard from Pat Hughes, right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670. The score, a three-run loss out west against the Giants. As we welcome you back into the Rahimi and Harris Show, I'm Mark Rohde in for Layla Rahimi. Cubs and Giants rematch tonight. 8:45 again. That guy Colin Ray is the man on the mound for the Cubs against Carson Wisenhunt for the San Francisco Giants. I heard something really interesting yesterday during Nico Horner's regular appearance on the afternoon show on the Spiegel and Holmes show. Yesterday, Anthony Herron filling in for Matt Spiegel, who's enjoyed a few well-deserved days off. And they were talking about Craig Counsell and, you know, the ups and downs of the season and the criticism surrounding everything about the Cubs and the rough stretch that they went through offensively, all of that kind of stuff. Leading Ian Happ to say something in regards to playing for the Cubs, which I think you can distribute to playing for our other teams and the pressure cooker that playing in a big city with crazy excited sports fans, what that can offer. And sometimes it can be tough. Some players and athletes in this town don't make it because of the pressure. I thought Nico Horner put it really well when he said this on the afternoon show yesterday.
I think more generally talking about, you know, the maybe more negativity or criticism from fans or things like that through a tough stretch. That's just part of having an amazing opportunity and having people that care. I think, like, I'd much rather be in a place where the opportunity for like joy and excitement and big moments is high, and that's also paired with, you know, criticism or challenges when things don't go well, because you want to be in a place where people care and it matters, and there is passion, and it's not always like going to be easy.
Listen, Nico Horner on the afternoon show, spitting fire. Because at the end of the day, when you play in a real city with real fans and you're playing games of actual consequence over the course of, I don't know, 162, that is good. And that should not be taken for granted from anyone, not the fan base themselves, not the ownership, the team, and certainly not the players. I think he's giving you a player's perspective and understanding how things go and how they also can go.
It's so refreshing, because usually the answer to that question is, and I understand to a degree, that that's all just outside noise. We don't pay attention to that. It's us against the world. No, it's part of the job, man. Like, it's part of the job description. Playing ball in a city like Chicago, it's going to suck sometimes, man. It's going to blow when things are going poorly, and it's going to feel like a lot of times we, as talk show hosts, or you, as the people listening, it's like we turn on you. You know what I mean? Like, think about it. We, at the beginning of the season, were doing entire segments, you, me, and Layla, on Pete Crow Armstrong.
Right.
And then things got really bad for PCA. And all of a sudden, we're talking about, what do? Do you sit them down? Do you put them down in the order? So it is, like, kind of frantic, the highs and the lows that come with playing in this city. But I don't know that I've ever heard anybody, and that was Nico Horner, putting it as well as he did. And I've heard versions of that. Like, yeah, you want it, like, it's a great sports city because people care. People are passionate. We've heard that a million times. But sort of accepting, and I think this is what he was doing here, accepting that some harsh criticism might come with it, that fans are going to be really mad, that fans are going to be on Reddit or wherever, and they're going to be saying harsh things, and you're going to hear it on the radio. And Ryan Poles has said this, believe it or not. Like, I've asked Ryan Poles before on the record, like, you know, about working in Chicago and some of the being in the fishbowl. And he literally said, it's life in the big city. It's life in the big city. It is. I think about us and what we do for a living as well as talk show hosts, that it could hurt too when we get that kind of stuff. We get that criticism. You know what I mean? Like, it's all over the board. So in some ways, we can relate to that, like doing good things, but then all of a sudden bad things happen and you start to get hammered a little bit. But I just thought that was so refreshing from Nico Horner.
So there are what I call big time sports cities, Chicago, check.
Yeah.
There are bandwagon sports cities, and I can give you some examples of those.
I want to know this, yeah.
And then there are niche sports cities.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize you
got that.
I'm going to sit back here right now.
So Chicago, definitely big-time sports city.
Yeah.
We like to call it the I-95 Eastern Seaboard. Those cities fall in the same category as Chicago. New York.
Yes.
Boston.
Check.
Philly.
Crazy good sports town.
D.C., when you talk about the Commanders and their fan base. Yeah. Well, no, I'm saying like Baltimore. These are where the conversations about sports permeate everyday life and everyday people, and it happens every day. Then there are the bandwagon cities, right?
I want to hear
where
this.
People, when the sports teams are doing well, want to talk about it. When they're not, apathy sets in.
Like the Blackhawks. We're guilty.
So there's different, like, even in the same city, there can be different fan bases that feel different ways about it. I remember I worked in Sacramento where they went through a decade and a half of never going to the playoffs. Can you imagine if a team went a decade and a half without even going to the playoffs?
You talk about the Kings?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's their only team.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
And that's their only team.
That'd be the only choice. Yeah.
And that's their only team.
Yeah.
Or if you look
they got those A's, don't they?
Look at the Bay Area. I was about to say, look at the Bay Area, though. And what happens when the teams either leave or, you know, your whole fan base is decimated by the fact that your team's just not going to be good. The apathy never set in with the Raiders because they're the Raiders. They're a national brand. Same with the Cowboys. Mm. This year is our year.
Yeah.
Different cities.
Yep.
But if you go to a city like Houston, okay, like football exists. That's good. But look at the Rockets and the Astros. Now, the Astros have been very, very good. But when the Astros weren't good, before they hit their current, you know, the Jose Altuve era, if you will, because he's a guy who's been there from start to finish of their playoff success, they're very bandwagon-y. You know, it's something to do, but it's not live and die by.
Right.
Cubs fans are out here living and dying.
Yeah.
By what's going on.
Bears fans, too.
Bears fans, certainly. Even though the team's been bad.
Yeah.
They're still living and dying with Bears season.
And they're all still here.
And that's
I took attendance. Every Bears fan is still here.
And when I say niche, perfect example.
Yeah, niche.
Imagine if they were if Nico Horner played for the Tampa Bay Rays, what that would be like. The team is good, right?
Yeah.
Teammate always in the mix. They're not getting the support of the city based on how well they're doing, though. They're just kind of, they're there. And so it's very different than, you know, NFL is king. So like Tampa Bay Buccaneers, that's a different kind of conversation.
Sure.
But we're talking about the 162 of baseball or the 82 of the NHL and the NBA. That's where the apathy can set in at a different level that you're not going to see when you're talking about NFL specifically, but you definitely see when it comes to baseball, depending on what city you live in.
Do you think Denver's a good sport? I think Denver's a pretty good sports city.
It's a good.
Have you worked there? Have you?
I haven't worked there, but I've been there covering things. I covered the hunt for. Well, I guess they called it Rocktober back then. The Phillies played the Rockies, and you remember the year the Rockies were super red hot in September.
Yeah,
and then they had that time off between playoff series, and that's when they just kind of cooled off and flamed out. Like they support their sports though because their sports are good generally.
Yeah,
look at the Nuggets, they're good. They have the best player in basketball right now.
Yeah.
The Broncos have returned. They got a real coach, and Bo Nix is going to be their guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at baseball, no, very bad. almost record-setting bad, although they're going to win the 42 games, and they're not going to go down and replace the White Sox. But even the Avalanche, they've been a good hockey team for years and years and years. So there's interest there. But it's a big enough market that it can sustain. But with these bigger sports cities, even if you go to like LA, when you've got multiple sports teams, Chargers, Rams, although the Chargers are really, nobody loves them because they're San Diego castoffs at this point.
Right.
It just, the thing is, Nico Horner understands this ultimately. There are two sides of the coin. And the highs are going to be higher in a city like Chicago, but the lows are going to feel a little bit more because everybody's going to be talking about you in a city like Chicago. So the highs are higher, the lows are lower.
That's a great way to put it. It is true. When you said that, what year was that Colorado when they had that good September? About.
It was the late 2000s. I'll look
like
right
not,
now.
Not in the last 10 years, right?
No,
what's
I think
going
it's
through my brain
the
right
previous.
Now, I want to say that I thought Colorado might have beat the Cubs or something in a consequential game, but that's just me thinking
there's no
out
way
loud.
To know.
Yeah, there's Wait, I got it there. Robbie, so, write it down, Robbie. Look it up, Tyler. That's the names over there. Yes.
So the Rockies got all the way to the World Series in 2007 before losing.
Okay, I'm way off.
And then,
I don't know what I was thinking.
I think that's what I'm referring to is 07.
In 07, the Cubs did go to the playoffs. They got their asses swept by the Dodgers.
I covered the NLDS when they lost in 09 to the Phillies.
Okay.
Since then, they've been twice, 2017, 2018. They lost in the wild card in 17. They lost the NLDS in 2018. And they got swept in that NLDS series to the Brewers. Back when the Brewers could go to the playoffs and do something.
Yeah.
So that was 2018.
Prince Fielder. Oh, 2018.
Yeah, 2018.
Okay.
So yeah, but my overriding point is, to me, there's three divisions here. There's the big city sports team. Like, this is a market where everything you do is of consequence. There's the bandwagon-y, which is the lesser. Like, well, if you're good and can sustain being good for a period of, you know, 3 to however many years, now you have our attention. And then there's the niche where, yeah, the fans are diehard, but there's not enough of them for a particular fan base to make it count unless they're very good.
This is a great point here, I think, by the top texter here, 773. And if you want to text us or jump in, we're always here for you. 312-644-6767. Raheemy and Harris on the score. I'm Mark Grody filling in for Layla. There's very few hardcore baseball cities. That's a great point, because we can make the argument that every city is a hardcore NFL city.
That's what separates football and just the nature of there's 17 games.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of special around each game. It's an event.
Right.
It is an arena event.
So what are the hardcore baseball cities? I guess we could call Chicago that.
Yeah, Chicago's definitely a hardcore,
hardcore baseball. I think Cincinnati is a hardcore baseball city. No?
I don't think they've had enough success to call them.
I heard a cheer down the hallway.
Get Ryan Porth. Get Ryan Porth to weigh
in
on that.
Actually, he could weigh in on that. I don't know.
I don't think it's a hardcore baseball city. I lived there for 2 years. I covered the team. It did not It did not feel hardcore.
I can see it. I've been there a million times, and it just felt baseball-y to me. But if you're there,
that means they're probably very good.
No. I was there because I was with the Cubs doing the pre and post.
They were not good
he said it's hardcore.
Oh, he said it is hardcore. Okay.
If it's that hardcore, you wouldn't have a fatalist attitude every time you were close to a playoff spot. That's what I would say about that. That's when you're resigned to your fate. We're not making it. They're 3 games out of a wild card right now.
Yeah.
That's why I don't think it's hardcore. But hardcore, you go up and down. So I think hardcore cities, Mets, Yankees, obvious.
Yeah. Give it to you.
Dodgers, obvious.
Bingo. San Francisco.
Cubs.
San Francisco
is a hardcore
big
baseball
time.
Hardcore
they
baseball city.
They are great fans, by the way.
They're not good this year, but guess what? The fans are still showing up.
They're really good fans. I mean, just like the aptitude of San Francisco, they're very mature, wise fans from my times there.
Hardcore baseball city. Because of the superstation influence, Atlanta.
Yeah.
Hardcore baseball city.
Yeah. Yeah. Although
where college sports rules that state, baseball is serious because it is a regional sport, not just an in-city sport.
But when they won the division like 10, 11 years in a row, I think it was, for real, real.
I think it was 12.
Maybe 12?
Wasn't it?
Okay, 12 I'll give you 12. Okay, 11 plus 1 is 12. I think that they had a bunch of playoff series where they were not necessarily selling out, or they weren't, and maybe that's just because of the expectation.
I think the fatigue of not winning at all.
Yeah, they won it once.
They won it once in that entire
12 bites of the apple.
I think it was 13. I want to see.
Okay. We just keep
going.
Maybe
you're right.
They won the division 30 straight times, as it turns out. The better trivia question would be, who was the team that broke the streak? Was that the Mets or was that Philly?
That
eventually overtook the mighty Atlanta Braves.
I believe it was
for
the Mets.
A brief period of time.
It was the New York Mets.
It was the New York Mets. Okay.
The New York Mets won it all in 2006.
Yeah.
And then the following year, the Phillies said, we got this.
Two good ones here. I can't believe we haven't mentioned either. St. Louis. I know.
Absolutely.
Everybody hates the Cardinals,
Absolutely.
But it's a hell of a baseball city. Boston is a hell of a baseball city.
Back to the East Coast and that whole take the drive.
Absolutely. Are the Phillies, is Philadelphia a hardcore baseball town?
I wish you were in Philadelphia and asked that question in public and see what happens
to you. I'm pretty sure it is. Hey, I eavesdrop on WIP every once in a while, you know?
Have you seen how they're treating Kyle Schwarber right now?
Oh, no. What are they doing to Schwarber?
Like a king.
He's the thuggish, ruggish bone. That's why, man.
Listen, they're talking to him as if he is Bryce Harper after signing on the dotted line.
What does he have? 45 homers, 130 RBIs?
He's the man.
He is the man.
To bring this to Chicago, though, you talk about the highs and lows of being in the city. Do you think Kyle Tucker has enjoyed the highs of lows of the city to stay?
I don't think he's enjoyed
them.
Because
I think he has had extreme highs here, and then maybe the lowest you could have where your own fans are booing you.
Well, I mean, to that end, and they brought it up on Marquee again last night. I don't know if they've ever brought it up. I noticed that they brought up, and I have been avoiding bringing this up, but the splits, man, for Wrigley Field and everywhere else, and this is from the Marquee Network. This is where I screenshotted their, I'm assuming, a Chris Kampka specialty. But at Wrigley Field, going into the game last night, Kyle Tucker was hitting .248, .369 OBP, .408 slug, and then everywhere else, hitting .275 OBP, .380 slug, .510. So it's not like that disparate, like that big of a difference, but it is a difference.
Give me the Wrigley again.
Yeah, sure. .248 average, OBP .369, slug .408, and then I'll run through just
what's great about what you just gave me.
Yeah,
that's this year for his career.
Yeah,
in 62 games played there, .253, .374, .410. So it's really right alongside what the career numbers. Mm. Are.
Okay.
So this is kind of who he is at Wrigley Field, I would say. I mean, 62 games would be a big enough sample size, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's just wild. I mean, and look, Jed Hoyer has lamented this, and we talk about it. Like, Wrigley Field has not been a good place to hit over the last 2 years. Like, it's weird the way we're talking about Wrigley Field these days like it's the old Expo Dome in Montreal, and like the alleys are 500 feet, and Wrigley Field it's not a fun place to hit. So you think about that, and some of the changes that have made at Wrigley Field have been responsible for it, video boards, things like that. You do have to wonder how much Kyle Tucker will take that into account. You know what I mean? Like I think Kyle Tucker probably has made up his mind all along that he might return to the Cubs, but he will test free agency and see what happens, obviously, because a deal has not been done. But it is interesting to think about it as it relates to any free agent, and especially the one that you want back, and that's Kyle Tucker, who did have another hit last night.
Yeah, I like where Kyle Tucker is right now. Keep him going. Get some of these other guys going is my thing.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll see if that happens against the rookie left-hander tonight. It should be an interesting matchup. Colin Ray, please show up.
Yeah, please show up. Please show up. Carson Wisenhunt. Is he related to Ken Wisenhunt?
I don't know if he is or is not. I just know he's a left-hander, which gives me pause, and he is one of their top prospects. Also, giving pause, they've never seen him before, so that's an area of concern.
We have to take a pause. It is the Rahimi and Harris Show on the Score. I'm Mark Grody, filling in for Layla Rahimi. It is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Come on.
We'll always continue to monitor the league in terms of calls with trades, waiver claims, to see if is there any way to help our football team get better.
That is Bears general manager Ryan Poles. This is the Rahimi and Harris Show. I'm Mark Grody, in for Layla Rahimi. And I have a Bears press release in front of me for immediate release Wednesday, October 27, 2025. Let me just fire through some of this before we talk a little bit about Ryan Poles. As we mentioned earlier, the Bears did make a couple of waiver claims. Linebacker DeMarco Jackson and defensive back Jalen Jones. Yes, that Jalen Jones. You're very familiar with Jalen Jones. Jalen Jones is very familiar with the Bears. Spent a couple of years here. They released the following. Scott Daly, the long snapper. Devin Duvernay getting the release. Also, signed to the practice squad, wide receiver Maurice Alexander, who definitely popped at times during the preseason. Wide receiver Miles Boykin. Britton Brown, the running back, who I think had a, 70-yard game in one of his preseason games, so good for him. Steven Carlson is back. Xavier Carlton. Power Eccles, the linebacker. Also, long snapper Luke Elkin. defensive back Trey Flowers, the big, tall Trey Flowers, is back with the Bears on the practice squad. Talk about big. Defensive lineman Jonathan Ford makes the practice squad. Defensive back Mekki Garner, also Tano Kapasan, also the defensive lineman Jamari Chroma. Offensive lineman Jordan McFadden, wide receiver J.P. Richardson squeaks onto the practice squad, and so does the former third-round offensive lineman Ricky Stromberg. So that's what it is right now for the Chicago Bears.
Does Britton Brown play Monday night against Minnesota?
Oh, my God. No, I'm going to say no. I am going to have faith that DeAndre Swift, Roschon Johnson, and Kyle Manungai will be healthy and good to go. The latter two that I just mentioned right now, not healthy. Unless we hear differently today. There's a practice happening right now.
Any of those names really sticking out to you on this practice squad?
Well, I think the Jonathan Ford is one because, he flashed sometimes last year. I mentioned Maurice Alexander. I think that's more of a good, that's an attaboy for me. Good for you. Good for you, Maurice Alexander. You earned a spot on there. And I don't know what's going on with the secondary. I guess I'm a little bit surprised to see Trey Flowers there. But yeah, nothing too crazy. Anything for you?
And this is all subject to change.
Yes.
Steven Carlson's interesting at tight end because seeing how that room specifically develops, knowing how much 12 personnel they like to use, and Durham Smythe obviously is that third tight end right now. And then the other thing is to know Passanio, like as a depth piece.
Yeah.
If you need someone, listen, people are going to get hurt. And so this taxi squad, as we used to call it back in the day, now the just practice squad, more official, you got to have guys on there who you believe can fit into what you're doing in a pinch. You've got to have guys. This is your minor leagues. You got to have good depth in your minor league system, even if you're a football team, not a baseball team.
What have ye on Ryan Poles? I know you've been wanting to get off some Ryan Poles stuff.
Listen, Ryan Poles has been given a second chance. It's like, this man had a bad illness diagnosed, went to the hospital. They said, you probably only got this much time to live. And then they found a cure. And they said, all right, we're going to give you the transplant, whatever organ you want to choose.
God, this is your darkest analogy yet.
Whatever organ you want to use.
My God.
And he got that transplant, and now he's got new life. But let's say it's a liver transplant. You know what that means? You got to stop drinking.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying Ryan Poles drinks. I'm saying for the analogy
right.
purposes.
You be careful.
You have to change your lifestyle.
Yeah.
The choices that you made to needing the transplant in the first place, that's got to all change. Because that's how you're going to stay healthy going forward.
I'm officially following you now. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I hope you were following me the whole way.
I just get sidetracked thinking
back,
about the analogies.
If we look back at the lifestyle choices that he made to need him getting a transplant in the first place, let's go to the 2023 draft because it wasn't that long ago. It was 2 years ago. In 2023, the third round pick, actually, let's go higher. Let's just go one through and we'll just go down. Darnell Wright, first round pick, top 10 pick. When you think tackle drafted with a top 10 pick, he has to be what?
Starter.
Just a starter? Doesn't he be good?
Yeah. Don't you think he's good?
I think he's adequate.
Okay.
Okay.
I mean, I think we could give a pass like to Ryan Poles on Darnell Wright.
No, I think he's still developing.
I think that there is high potential for Darnell Wright to be the Bears' starting right tackle for a long time.
So it's year three, so we need to make sure in year three he's good enough to warrant saying he's a cornerstone of our offense.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, we're not necessarily cornerstone, but I think we're pretty close.
I think we're saying he's good. He's been a good player on their offensive line,
okay.
a unit that has had trouble.
Yeah.
He's been one of their better players.
Trouble.
Exactly. Second round pick,
should
53 overall.
Trouble.
Jervon Dexter. At 53
he's
overall.
He's a second round pick. I mean, jury's still out?
Exactly. Jury's still out. But we haven't gotten rid of him.
No.
There's room.
Yeah. There's room, but you're right. He's teetering on the edge of disappointment, but still there and still hope. I still have hope.
Wait till you hear this next name.
Yeah.
Tyreek Stevenson. Is he starting against the Vikings Monday night?
I do believe he will.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
Did he have a questionable at best season last year?
Yeah, he did. He had a rough season last year. Yeah, he did. And not just with the Washington game.
Just in general.
In coverage. Like, you just want to take away all the peripherals and just looking at the tape. It was a rough year for Tyreek Stevenson.
Yeah, so far we could say Darnell Wright is a W in this draft class.
Yeah.
That's what we're really doing. Yeah. W or not, or jury's still
out? Jury's still out.
So for Dexter and Stevenson, we could say the jury's still out.
So I'm for that. Yes.
L, third round, Zach Pickens. It's an L.
Yeah.
Roshon Johnson.
He's a fifth round pick. He's a fifth round running back, right?
He's a fourth round pick.
Okay, my bad. Yeah, that's not good. That's not, yeah. That's not good.
So we're talking about the top half of that draft. I'll give you one more name.
Okay.
And I already know the answer.
Okay.
Tyler Scott, also fourth round.
Yeah, that's a cut right there. That's not good.
It's an L.
That's not good. That's an L.
Now, I'm going to give you a W here.
Okay.
Fifth round, Noah Sewell.
Noah Sewell. Yeah,
that's a W.
Yeah, he's a good special teams player, and it looks like he's going to be playing a lot of linebacker this year.
Okay. Next guy, Terrell Smith.
That's a win.
Okay, Terrell Smith.
Even though he's hurt, he's out for the rest of the season.
There were no sixth rounders. Seventh round, Travis Bell, Kendall Williamson. We know the story there.
Right.
Those are just, because it's the seventh round, you just let it slide.
Travis Bell or Kendall Williamson, one of those two is the greatest guy of all time, according to Ryan Poles. Okay. And a lot of those guys.
Well, great guys aren't what we need here. We need great players.
I know.
Great players.
Right.
That if they happen to be great guys, great.
Right.
It's a bonus.
It is. You're right.
My point is, people will say I'm overly critical of Ryan Poles. But we're talking about 2 years ago, this man was in charge of the draft, and you've got how many W's, according to you just now? I believe that's two.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you go back two.
Or
go
three.
All the drafts. I mean, Velus Jones. I mean, maybe you have it all there in front of you. I'm not sure.
I do have it all here in front of me.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to go
more recent because, you know, 2022, you've made decisions on guys. They've played, you know, 2 years, 3 years. That's more. But I'm saying this is recent.
Yeah.
This is very recent.
Yeah.
And so, looking at even last year's draft, there were only five players taken. So, you can't do as deep a dive as I just did with all the guys that were taken in 2023. And you've got to be able to develop players.
Let me ask you this. Do you feel good about, on the surface, do you feel good about Ryan Poles' draft this year? And specifically Colston Loveland and Luther Burden and Ozzie Trapillo. You feel good about it?
I feel like jury's still out on Ozzie Trapillo because he couldn't win the left tackle job.
No doubt. Well, I mean, the jury's out on all these guys.
No, but you told me he was going to be a left tackle. You said it's not a problem that he played right tackle mostly in college.
No, I never said no.
Saying Ryan Poles told us he said about.
I said that.
Remember what he said about Ozzie Trapillo when he drafted him?
Yeah, that he could be a left tackle. Absolutely.
Full confidence. It wasn't, if he can play left tackle.
And it's still possible that he could be, but for now it's like, and this is what I appreciate, that they're like, it ain't happening right now. Get on over to right tackle. This is adult time. This is real football time. So we'll talk to you later about left tackle. I think that's what's going on.
Zay Frazier hasn't taken the field. Zay Frazier's out.
Really upsetting.
And that's a fifth round pick.
Yeah. He's out for the season.
Yes, he's out. That's what I'm saying. He's not going to. We're not going to learn anything about him this season. Shamar Turner, what have you seen him do?
Get injured, but he's back.
But I'm just saying.
No, I know.
What have you seen him do? It's early.
But I don't know if we could put the qualifier of jury still out, because the jury's still out on every one of them.
You brought me the 2025. Yeah. I'm just giving what I can on that.
That's fair.
That's why I went 2 years ago,
because
I feel like there's a lot more data out there on these guys.
Do you feel good, though, about Colston Loveland and Luther Burden being productive this year? Do you feel like those are going to be players?
I do. You know why? Not Ryan Poles. Ben Johnson.
Yeah.
That's why.
Right. That you could have somebody that can scheme them up.
And you could say to me, well, Ryan Poles hired Ben Johnson. The way the story was told to me is Ben Johnson got on the conference call and the first words out of his mouth were, I want to be the Bears head coach.
Mm-hmm.
And the last words on that call were, I want to be the Bears head coach. So it's not like Ryan Poles did this supreme recruiting job on Ben Johnson. Ben Johnson saw Caleb Williams. He saw, because he had been in the division, knew what the Bears were working with, and he said, that's the job I want.
Yeah.
I want to go to Cubs games in October when I'm not at work.
He's got to get better. He does. Is this a call here? This Berkeley and Quentin or no?
Well, no, but before okay. before we even go to that, I just want to tell people Bears training camp coverage on the Score is over because this is the last practice before game week goes. But it also that Bears training camp coverage on the Score is presented by Chevy Drive Chicago and the number one draft pick Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears.
Check this
Did
out.
Did you just say?
Yeah. We have just been told that we will be joined by Ian Happ next. We had a little time zone issue earlier, so we are thrilled that after the break, we are going to talk to the Cubs left fielder about everything from last night, everything Cubs, coming up next on the Raheem and Harris Show with me, Mark Grody, filling in for Layla on the Score.
The talent that's here and the talent that is continuing to develop here. We obviously have some mainstay guys like Ian Happ.
Ian Happ, Cubs all-star outfielder.
Here's Ian Happ lining one down the right field line. Base hit up against the wall. Happ is going for a double, and he will have two bases.
Gold Glove Award winner.
And a high fly ball hit to deep left. Happ going back. He's at the track near the wall. Leaps, and he makes the catch. Another excellent play in left.
Host of the Compound Podcast.
Owen's awesome. He's Canadian.
Yeah. Oh, really? They didn't say that 48 times.
I don't know if you know that about Owen. He's Canadian. He's got juice, man. He's got juice. He gets the ball hard. He's got oppo juice. Just cool, like, to see the first hit. Cool to see backside homer.
Connect Roasters coffee enthusiast.
Here's a man that probably has five fresh pots a day.
Ian Happ on 670 The Score.
We toast you, Ian Happ.
Raheem and Harris on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I am Mark Grody filling in for Layla today. And we are thrilled to be able to go to San Francisco. And joining us now on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline is indeed Cubs left fielder Ian Happ. Download the Circa Sports app today. Ian, how are you? What's going on, man?
Doing well. How are you guys?
We are doing well as well. We're very happy that we have you on here. I know you guys are getting ready to go in San Fran, a rematch tonight, Colin Ray against Carson Wisenhunt. But Marshall and I, Ian, were talking about it earlier, and I'm sure you were talking about it too after the game. What we thought was a catch in the second inning, negotiating the net in left field, and you did catch the ball, did go in your mitt, reviewed by San Francisco, and overturned. Ian, did you know it was going to get overturned?
When I saw the video, I did. I didn't know right away. I thought, when I caught it, I thought that I had caught it, because I couldn't tell if it hit the net beforehand. But then as soon as I saw the replay, they had a good angle of it, and it was like, well, that's not a catch.
So you were like all of us, looking up at the Jumbotron, like we're looking up at the instant replay. Ian, a tough loss last night. Does that take the day off into account that you lost some momentum? I don't even know if you believe in momentum, but would you have rather played on Monday after getting the sweep?
No, I don't think so. I think that was, you know, just from the stretch that we had of the five games in 4 days and then going to the West Coast. I think the day off was nice and we needed it. But Verlander did a good job and their bullpen did a good job. And I think, you know, that it's interesting. San Francisco's the way the wind blows and kind of the chilly weather in the middle of August. It's a tough place to score runs. You know, it always has been. And so I thought we left some guys on base yesterday, had some good at-bats with runner scoring position, but didn't quite get a chance to break it open early. And our bullpen did a good job of keeping us in a place where we could claw back into that one. But that's a good team. And they played well. And, you know, we got two more games left in the series to come out with the series win.
Yeah, no doubt. It's funny what you say about the weather in San Fran. It's always funny. Like, as long as I've been watching the Cubs, I've been watching since the 80s, Ian, whenever there's a San Francisco series, and there's only one a year, it's always like all of a sudden, like, we go from the 90 degree of Chicago to there's Taylor McGregor in the dugout with like a coat on doing the pregame. So it is an odd atmosphere in San Fran. You guys got to spend the day off there too, didn't you?
Yeah, we got to spend the day off here. And so, you know, being able to get to the city and, you know, when you get on the West Coast, just being able to have a day where you can get acclimated, where you can, you know, try to get
onto the time zone. I think that one of the hardest things about getting on the West Coast is those first couple of days you're waking up at 7 a.m. and trying to force yourself to keep sleeping because you're working nights. So to be able to get that off day and trying to get on the schedule was nice.
I learned that too, man. That's a real thing. I just thought when I was doing pre and post for you guys, 15 to 17, I was like, my God, like how, it is. Like I used to sort of blow that off as, oh, come on, they're professional baseball players. But that two-hour thing, man, and going out west, it can definitely have an effect on one's body for sure. Does everybody feel better right now, Ian, that Kyle Tucker, I mean, another hit last night, he kind of looks like himself again. Does everything feel better now, or is that ruckus starting to settle down right now?
I mean, yeah, he's one of the best players in baseball, one of the best hitters in the game. We're all going to go through stretches like that. There's going to be times where the balls you're hitting, you're not getting the results, and things feel a little bit off. But yeah, he looks. And I think the most impressive part about that stretch is that he still walked a ton. He was still getting on base a ton because he's a professional hitter. But you know, him clipping a couple of balls in LA, seeing the ball leave the yard, you know, it has him feeling more right.
Ian, as we look at this game tonight, it's interesting because you're going up against Carson Wisenhunt, a guy you haven't seen before. And I'm curious as to what your approach is when a guy is up from the minors. This is kind of the case this time of year for several teams. What changes and how do you try to scout him out?
Yeah, I think it's reading the report and just trying to identify kind of what he does well and matching it to your strengths. Trying to see exactly, okay, here's what he's trying to do, or here's what has been effective for him against the rest of the league, and then matching that to, okay, here's a pitch that I hit well in a place that I want to look. And so when you haven't seen a guy before and you don't have kind of that experience with him, that's kind of the deciding factor. You know, he's got a good fastball. He's throwing a ton of changeups to righties, so he's kind of a fastball changeup mix with a rare breaking ball. And so trying to get the fastball to a place where you can handle it and lay off that kind of down and away changeup for the righties.
Matthew Boyd had kind of a rough one last night, 5 1/3, allowing 5 runs on 6 hits. Did strike out 8 like he usually does, walked a few, gave up 2 homers. I guess there's not much shame in giving up a 2-run homer to Matt Chapman, but we still feel good about Boyd. You think he's okay, same old Matt Boyd in the clubhouse postgame?
Yeah, he's a professional, and that's one of the things that it's really impressive about him is he does a really good job of looking at his outing and understanding what went wrong or what the mistake was. And the hardest thing for a pitcher is, you know, he makes the one pitch to Chapman that he handled really well. And it was kind of an upheater, not a bad pitch, but Chapman takes him out of the yard. And that's the difference between going, you know, 6 innings with 3 or 6 innings with 5. And so that one bad pitch is something, or the one that Chapman handled is kind of the difference in that outing. You know, the other two, and especially like that Devers blooper, it's like, that's a really good pitch.
Yeah.
And that's if he gets out of that inning and he's got 2 runs through 5, you know, it's a little bit of a different story. And so, he does a really good job of just evaluating it, understanding, and then making the decision for the next outing or kind of the process for the next 4 days before he pitches again.
Yeah, that was that inning. I characterized it as annoying last night, that 5th inning where Matos gets the leadoff double. It looks like Boyd's going to get out of it, gets the next 2 outs, and then the Ramos hit, and then the damn Devers hit, which just found the exact space on the field that it needed to be. Ian, thank you so much, man, for kind of rearranging your schedule a little bit to join us a little bit later. We appreciate you, always appreciate you coming on The Score, man. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys. Have a good one.
Yeah, you
too. Thanks, Ian.
That is Ian Happ. And guess what? I'm giving something away. I am going to give something away right now because I love Riot Fest and I plan on going to Riot Fest. Caller 6 to The Score contest line, 312-540-0670, will win a pair of general admission tickets to Riot Fest on Sunday, September 21st, featuring performances by Green Day, Idols, Bad Religion, Inhaler, and more.
The more, by the way, is Mark Grody will be there. So if you run into him, take a picture, take a selfie, make That's him right. take several selfies with you.
That's, I would love to. I love meeting our listeners out in the wild. It's always a blast. Coming up next, speaking of a blast, it is the Spiegel and Holmes show. I saw Lawrence Holmes. I also saw Russ Dorsey.
Here we go.
So here we go. Here we go is right. Transition is next on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.